I'm Sandy Klein, and welcome to another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. Hairs to Lorraine Massey, my guest today. She's been changing the world one curl at a time. Stylist, curly hair expert, founder and co-owner of the successful Divashon franchise that includes salons in New York and one in L.A., and creator of a multi-million dollar line of Divashon products, Massey has been on a personal and professional crusade encouraging women to go natural and love their curls. One of the means to that end is her best-selling book, Curly Girl. It encourages and empowers women who have curly hair to get rid of what she calls the weapons of mass curl destruction, blow fryers, straighteners, and harsh detergents. And to that end, Massey joined forces with a professional team and developed a complete line of products for the curly lifestyle. Her journey from hair to here began in England, where Massey, who says she looked like Orphan Annie, was verbally exhorted by folks telling her to brush her hair. In the spirit of full disclosure, let me say I have curly hair and spent a lot of time growing up trying to fight it. I used chemicals and even ironed my hair in an attempt to straighten it instead of celebrate it. Then I decided short hair made the most curl-free sense, so up until a few years ago, I would get my hair cut every 6 weeks, until I was turned on to the Divashon Salon in Manhattan's Soho neighborhood. I've been hooked, and I am so excited to meet and get to know Lorraine Massey, curl to curl. Lorraine, welcome.
Well, thank you so much. That was beautiful.
First of all, I want to begin by just asking, what is the genesis of the name Divashon, which is spelled D-E-V-A-C-H-A-N?
Yes.
So explain that.
Thank you for asking. Not many people ask that question, but Deva means goddesses. It's Aramaic. It's also Hindu. There's lots of different interpretations, but Deva means a higher realm. Deva. And a chan is a place, so it means a heavenly realm, basically. And it's almost, it means a core place that doesn't change, and it's the core within yourself. So because of that core, you can go anywhere you want, but you'll always return to your core, which is never changing.
Okay, see, I thought you spelled diva wrong.
Deva.
So take us on the journey from when you were 13 and everybody said you were a shoo-in for Little Orphan Annie, to the successful career that you have had for so many years now.
It was really just this search for understanding the chaos theory with on top of my head, really. But I'm thinking that I would take on a profession that would actually help me. But hairdressing actually just endorsed that it was bad, you know.
So that your hairstyle was bad.
Yeah. So here I was thinking I was going to understand it, but actually it condoned curly hair. So every client wanted to have their hair straight. So for years and years and years, wherever there is a flat iron, a blow dryer, or anything that is going to take away what our natural is, there's a curly girl waiting to happen. I usually say frizz is just a curl waiting to happen too.
You know, but you didn't know that at
13. No, not at all. Not at all. So I went to Asia. So my journey
was...
Where
everybody has straight hair, right?
Well, actually, that is a misunderstanding too, which I found out once I got there too, because there's a lot of Asian cultures that do have naturally curly hair. It's just that they wear it so long and pulled so tightly. Once it's allowed to be released, you'll be amazed at the expansion and contraction, even in Asian cultures. Mm-hmm. But the majority may have a straighter hair type, but here I was in search of the straight hair, you know, only to forget about my own. So living in Asia was a really great experience. But then I realized there was waves and curls everywhere, no matter where I went.
But when you were 13, did you think you were a freak because you had, you know, corkscrew curls? And did you just lament how you looked, or did you embrace it?
No, never embraced it. It was other people that also told me that I look like a freak, you know, within my
family.
Own family and culture. My first request, even though I do come from quite a poor background, you know, we had to share our bathhouse with other people. So my first request was a long straight wig, and I was 3 years old,
oh,
and a Polynesian hula skirt. And I actually got it at 3 years old.
You got a wig?
I got a straight head wig for a gift as a birthday present. Yeah. And I wore it all the time. I just wore it when I got home from school, just pretended I was Polynesian hula dancer. And then just other people telling me how bad it is, and she's so scruffy. Look at her. What's her hair doing? You know, and nobody really knew how to look after it. So a lot of people have said to me things that your mothers didn't know. Your mothers don't know about curly hair. They didn't know. You know, cut it off really short and things like that too, which didn't help. Always made you feel really, well, not pretty. So basically, I grew up just being like the overweight kind of curly girl. Like, oh, she's, you know, she's a friend. she's a good friend, but
were
I was
bullied
never...
by your peers.
Yes, I was definitely bullied for sure. Yeah, they said that I had pubic hair, I looked like a clown, and they would ask me to sit at the back of the class because I was in the way of the blackboard. People would throw things.
You were blocking their view. Yeah. Your hair was blocking their view.
And they would throw things in my hair. I did find some gum in my hair one day at home, and my mom had to cut it out. You know, things like that. But it's just, it just makes you, you know, what doesn't kill you, it cures you, I suppose. And it just makes the way. And bullying really is, you know, not just with hair, but it's rampant everywhere.
So what turned it around for you? I mean, I read about you at 13, went into salons to cut hair?
No, I was I washed. I was a hair washer. I was an apprentice.
Okay. Yeah. After school.
Well, I had a friend of the family had a hair salon, actually, and her name, ironically, was Lorraine.
Oh, that's
and
funny.
I just helped her. I worked after school. I would go there and help her. And
just seems like an odd place for you to help, considering – your hair at that time was the bane of your existence. You'd think you'd work in a bookshop or something.
Yeah, no, I wanted to go towards it. And also she offered me the job. She's like, oh, you know, I need a Saturday girl. And I was like, okay. And I always wanted to earn my own money anyway, you know. So I saved all my money. And then by the time I took on an apprenticeship, I decided to go to Hong Kong for a holiday for 2 weeks. And I never returned.
So what did you do in Hong Kong?
Hair-wise, well, I got off the plane. I stayed at the YMCA. The next day, I went to Roger Craig Hair Salon. If he's listening in Australia, I'll send this to him.
And you were how old?
At the time, I was 17.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I said to him, could I get a job? And he said, oh, I'm not sure. You know, I'm going to have to see your credentials and I need to see your work. So I said, okay. So I went on the streets. I brought two girls back.
You kidnapped two women.
Two women within an hour. And I showed them showed him two haircuts and he hired me on the spot.
And he hired you in spite of your hair?
Yeah. In fact, I have some amazing pictures from Hong Kong because the humidity was so
intense.
Like it literally filled up a room. But I think he kind of thought it was quirky. So I was lucky. I was just lucky that there was somebody, you know, that saw me. Actually, he liked my work. It was my work that spoke. It wasn't really even me.
But nobody wanted to emulate your hair, right?
No.
At that point.
It was always something more of a joke or a fun. But then one really lovely chap said to me, Lorraine, why don't you just put loads of conditioner in your hair instead? You know, and all of a sudden my brain just went, oh my God, you're right. So I stopped shampooing then and there. So I haven't shampooed my hair since I was 17 years old. I've been using just really cheap conditioners.
You have not, I mean, because your product line includes shampoo, as in no poo, but you use that.
I use that, yeah. I use that now because it's just more of a intensive cleanser using herbal, you know, like the peppermint, which is a natural medicinal, rosemary is, lavender is. So we just put these beautiful emollients, mixed in with emollients, and it just cleanses your hair beautifully.
Who's we?
My business partner and myself.
But this, we're sort of jumping ahead a little bit.
Yeah.
At that point,
yeah.
I mean, when you were still in Hong Kong, said, don't shampoo your hair. So you stopped.
Well, he didn't actually say, don't shampoo your hair. He says, why don't you just put loads of conditioner in and leave it? And then all of a sudden, I was like, oh, okay. This, you know, it just somehow, curly girls, whenever they get into the salon and we start talking, it seems like they get it straight away. The ones that have has a high frizz factor and the hair is perpetually dry. Whereas it's hard for hairdressers actually to understand this. They still, think shampoo, you've got to shampoo. Whereas the curly girl seems to get it.
Did you think he had something going here in terms of like just use conditioner on your hair?
In retrospect, when I think about Barry, God rest his soul, yes. He definitely had some innate intuitive, because he saw how unhappy I was as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he just said, hey, sweetie, you know, come on, you know, maybe just, you know, just use a lot of conditioner And I said, wow. All of a sudden, it was like literally that aha moment. And then that was it.
Because conditioner does not contain the same detergent that shampoo
does. Exactly. But I didn't really think about it that way. I wasn't really thinking technically. But I still actually did interject shampoo because it's what we do. It's we've been trained to do.
Do you not soap your body? It seems like that would be a similar thing. Well, sure, yeah. I take a shower, but I don't put on any – I don't use soap.
Exactly. So I just would – cleanse with conditioner, and I love those days. And it was like, okay, it's been a week. I have to do it because it was what we were told to do. So then again, it would set me back for another week or so when I would shampoo, but I didn't really put it together for a while. And then one day I just said, wait a minute, why don't I just completely skip shampoo and just cleanse with my conditioner? So I did the same motion with conditioner.
Agitation. Yeah, like scratching your scalp.
Uh-huh. Yeah, with your pads of your fingers. You know, massage it.
Right. Which is what you're doing now. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which breaks up dirt, any dirt residue that might be on your scalp. And you have to remember your scalp is an extension of your facial skin. Would you put shampoo on your face? No. So I was asking myself all these questions. No, I wouldn't. Why would I put it on my face? It dries my face out. So why would I put it on my scalp? The thing is, the difference between our scalp and our hair, they're two different
materials?
Materials in a way, because your skin is your skin.
Right.
And it renews itself constantly, where the hair is it's a skin appendage that grows out of the scalp.
Okay.
Which is a fiber-like consistency. So then once I started to look at fibers and things like that, and then you thought about clothing, whereas, you know, we take our clothes off and we cleanse them, but we don't wear them every day. This fiber we wear every day of our life. So this is really just a preservation idea and technique. It preserves the hair as it grows while you're living with it every day of your life, so it's not being agitated or destroyed or disturbed in its natural environment. So it's just to keep it healthy, really.
So this applies to
every hair type.
Right. It doesn't matter if it's frizzy or curly.
Exactly. Every hair type can benefit from
this.
With the
exception of bald people.
But they have to clean their scalp anyway, you know, and it doesn't have to be with a detergent. They don't have to use soap. You know, use a bit of Nopu, use it all over the body for shaving. It's amazing because it has this amazing hydrating, wetting agent. So it penetrates into the hair really quickly. And I use it to shave. I shave my legs. The boys use it for their face because it really has this smoothing, you know, refreshing quality to it. It's lovely.
You're having this epiphany when you're still a very young woman.
By this point, I was probably like 20. I was in Japan. I was probably like 21. And also being in Japan, it was so cold. And the only means of water, you know, was to go to the local bathhouse, you know, we didn't have showers in the house that we were all living in.
Mm-hmm.
So my hair actually went longer periods of time without actually cleansing it. And that was when, I started to link all this together. Like, oh, I really should be cleansing right now, but I don't have really a means to actually a full flush, but my hair's still getting better and better. You know, the curl started to lock in, the individuality of it. I get more and more compliments. And then I thought, oh, there's got to be something here. But I never wanted to tell anyone. I was so afraid to tell anyone that I didn't use shampoo.
Because they would think you were just
exactly.
a heathen.
It wasn't even on my radar that I would tell anybody at all.
So is it that when you wound up in the States that things really started to take off?
Yeah. I came to the United States and I worked in the salon for a little while and I was, you know, fired because he actually didn't like my hair, the hairdresser who I was working for. And I
guess he thought you were bad PR?
Maybe. Actually, that's exactly what happened when I was in Beverly Hills. The owner was away when I was hired. Somebody else hired me. And when he returned, he saw my hair and he was like, somebody has got to blow dry that girl's hair because she cannot be seen in this salon. And I remember just like panicking in my heart, just like, you know, palpitating. And I said, listen, I'm quitting. And I just walked out and I left. I called my friend to pick me up and I never looked back.
And how did you wind up in New York and when?
I came to New York in 1987, just literally passing through and thinking that I was just going to hang out for a couple of weeks. And that was it. I was like, this is it. I walked through SoHo and I said, this is where I want to be. This is where I want to root. It was like instant.
So though, did you find it – you found a job in a salon in SoHo?
Found a job in SoHo, and it was really – he gave me a chance in a way, even though he had me stay in the basement to cut hair. But I became quite busy quite quickly. He was worried about lots of different things. I don't know what was going on. And I suppose I didn't have a proper visa yet. So he did fire me. Mm-hmm. And I found myself without a job. And luckily, one of the girls at the salon started to give my number out to my clients who I'd started to develop. And they came to my five-floor walk-up apartment where I started my whole business. Everyone came. I had women who had a Rolls Royce would wait outside on Sullivan Street.
Oh, that's crazy.
Five floors they would walk up. I had no water for them. My dishes were in the sink. But people seemed to be quite happy with the results. And that was also when my dry cutting technique really took hold, because I couldn't really wet the hair. And it turned out that when I was able to start cleansing people's hair, when I did have a salon, a lot of my clients were like, no, I'm fine. So I have the most amazing clients that just come in, I cut the hair dry, as is, and they leave.
Well, that was an experience that happened to me when yes. I first went. I thought, they said, no, you get your hair cut first. And I was all prepared to go to a sink and somebody shampoo my hair.
Yeah.
And my hair was cut dry.
Yeah.
Now it just
yes.
makes perfect sense.
I know. I'm looking at your curls, by the way. Sandy has the most gorgeous curls, and I love her color, too. And it's true, because every curl, I'm looking at every curl on your head, it's individual. You know, the curl in the front does not belong, is not connected to the curl on the side. So we wear our hair dry. Why don't we, you know, cut it dry? And, you know, Sandy could be looking at my curl right now. It's pulled down to the top of my chest.
Right.
And then the spring, you know, it springs up at least 4 inches. And that would be devastating for me if you cut my hair when it was wet, because you'd have no idea.
Exactly. Now, do you cut your hair?
I cut my own hair. I haven't had my hair cut by a hairdresser since I was 16, and his body was never found. And that's why I live in America now.
Okay.
I'm teasing. But a lot of curly girls totally get it sometimes.
I understand. Okay, let me compose myself. So you've got this incredible business out of your fifth floor walk up, and at some point you said, I think I
got to
move.
Yeah, I started getting complaints. But at the same time, it was just time. We were at capacity. I had a little baby as well. And so there was a couple of times I cut hair with him. Like, I had one of those backpacks. You know, because my babysitter was late. He was in the other room. So I actually, you know, it was just time to move out. The thing is, I found this lovely place and I couldn't afford both an apartment and a salon. So I actually lived in the back of the salon for quite a few years, which is something that nobody knew that. My clients didn't know that. They were like, oh, your kids are here. And I'd be like, yeah, but it's just a little nursery. Meanwhile, we were hidden behind the walls for a while. So then eventually I was able to save enough money and finally get an apartment, you know, so I could live there.
But when you started your business, it was just you?
It was just me.
You were the chief cook and bottle washer?
Yeah.
You did everything?
Everything. I had a lovely assistant who is actually still with the company now, too. So he's been with me for a long time.
But there was a marriage made in your business, right? You eventually did hook up.
Yes, I eventually hooked up with my business partner.
How did that happen? And tell us a little bit about him.
I'm going to be dead honest then, because, I just had a baby. It was my second baby. And I found out that her father had been having an affair. So I was devastated. And I have to tell you, it was probably the worst time of my life. I was just down, really down. And I started, you know, being the only person in the salon, I felt like I was so exposed and I didn't want people to see my sadness. You know, you come and get your hair done and you don't want to feel that. So I decided it was time to expand and to bring in new people so I cannot, you know, I'm not the front billing.
Mm-hmm.
So I put the word out, you know, I'm looking for a few people to start to come in and work in the salon with me.
This is when, in the 90s, early 90s?
This was 96. And my friend put the word out and a couple of people came in and I finally met my business partner through that.
Who is?
Dennis De Silva. He had lots of other opportunities, but he decided that it was, you know, this may be a good match. But we were just working together for about 2 weeks, and within the 2 weeks we kind of figured out, why don't we go into business together and I'll become your partner.
Now, his bent is color.
He does color and cut. He started to color my hair, and he understood how I hated getting my hair highlighted because it would be brushed out, then it would be foiled, and my hair would break. So he just through working with my hair and
experimenting,
seeing how like unhappy I would, and it would hurt. I was thinking this shouldn't hurt this much, and pulling and brushing all my curls out so you didn't see the individual curl. He then just through my kind of, you know, angst with color, he started to, you know, paint each curl. And then the Pintura technique just developed from there.
Because that's really unusual.
It's painted. It's truly tailored. Like, even the haircut is tailored for you. You know, like, it's taking it and tailoring it to you. You're an individual. Your curls, you know, when left to be themselves, are beautiful. So why don't we look at them and just paint them as we see them? It's very visual. The thing is, we've been so blindfolded. We pull everything down to a straight line and just paint these strips of hair. It's all cookie cutter.
Mm-hmm.
And the color is foil, which breaks the hair. It bakes the hair and breaks the hair. It has no business being in your hair at all, because your hair is the most beautiful accessory you're ever going to have. It's for life. It's not just for a day. So a lot of disrespect goes on within the industry when it comes to hair. So basically, Dennis and I, what we did was we took the industry. So we've both been doing hairdressing the same amount of time. He was 13 too. And we both have taken the industry, taken out all the stuff that it wasn't necessary, not really needed. Like, for instance, you color hair. Dennis and I decided that, okay, if we're laying color on a piece of fabric, why are we washing it out 2 minutes after the timer goes off?
Mm-hmm.
So if you dyed your clothes, you wouldn't put it in detergent because all the water would, all the color would bleed.
Right.
So we thought, oh, okay, let's just use no poo when we're cleansing the color too, so we don't strip the color.
I see.
So why would you put it on only to wash it out two minutes after? No wonder our hair deoxidized, dried out, became brittle, and, you know, it would break, or the color would just fade so quickly. So that was one thing we took out. You know, whereas a lot of the hairdressers still have a problem with that. But I think once you describe the logic, they're like, oh, okay, that's true. But you have to describe the logic. The same with cutting curly hair wet. You know, the logic is we don't wear our hair wet. And our contraction expansion, some of our multi-textural girls, their expansion can be up to 22 inches only to contract to a 3-inch.
Wow.
So
it's so obvious, it seems.
It's so obvious. So even just the diffuser we have, it's in the shape of a hand. You put your hand in your hair. Okay, that's logic. So all we've done is taken the best of the best,
mm-hmm.
kept it, made it even better, and we just got rid of the stuff that just didn't make any sense whatsoever.
So you did say composes no poo shampoo.
Yeah.
So it's mostly herbs?
Well, yes. I mean, if you think about it, we've been around since the beginning of time,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it's only really within the last 8 years have we started to use products and things like that. But it's, you know, detergents came right after the war. And the thing is, it's all we know. And when you tell people not to shampoo, they just freak out.
Of course.
So no poo basically means no SHIT.
Oh, you can say it.
Mm-hmm. So we just really took, again, the detergents out, all the things, even our chemist. I said to my chemist, I said, why is it that my hair is doing and thriving so well and I'm not using shampoo? He said, oh, because you're not using sodium lauryl sulfate. He said, it's universally known as a skin irritant and it dries the hair out, but it's what everybody wants. So we still keep it in there. So he said, that is why your hair's thriving. So they know it. It's just that everyone is brainwashed literally into thinking they need detergent.
But does this apply to women with naturally straight hair
yes.
as well? This
yeah,
is
because hair fiber, the molecular structures of hair fiber, curly or straight, the thing is, it is a fiber. So a lot of naturally straight girls, they find that when they do use detergent, the detergent actually you know, stays in the hair. Because if you think about it, you know, when you get a sponge or even just like a silk and you put detergent on it, you have to keep rinsing it for ages before it comes out. So silk would be considered like a straight hair. For us, it would be, you know, curly is more like a sponge.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So the thing is, when you use the detergent, and sometimes we don't rinse it all out. A lot of straight girls tend to run their hands through the hair a lot. So a lot of the oil comes from their hands, and also the buildup of the detergent in the hair makes it look oily. And so it's like this domino effect, you know, what it does. So a lot of straight girls think, oh, I've got to shampoo my hair because my hair's so oily. They don't realize that they're actually, the shampoo is the reason why it's uber oily.
Now, straight-haired women go to your salon.
Oh, yeah, naturally straight. So the thing is, we work with every hair type that just wants to be natural.
Including frizz.
Well, frizz is a co-weight and tapping. Frizz is not a hair type. Frizz is a condition of what we've been doing to it. So if we've been shampooing, blow frying, doing all this, no wonder our hair's frizzing. The moment we come out of the womb, which is this beautiful amniotic sac, you know, if I'm saying it right, it's beautiful. We've lived there for 9 years and 9 months. And then all of a sudden...
Seems like 9 years.
And all of a sudden, the first thing they do is go and shampoo this child and put them right back into the world like salt. But detergent is a salt, it assaults the body.
So you have no poo. You also have conditioner and you have gel.
Yes.
And what's the point of gel?
Well, the gel is, you know, like, for instance, if you have a wood finish, you know, you have a wood surface and you want to bring out the grain of the wood, but you want to keep it clear so therefore you can see the wood. The thing is with the hair, what we're doing is we're crystallizing the curl from its wet form. So there's your curl. It's this beautiful spiral, for instance. And we're going to put the gel in, and the gel is almost like what do you call it, like paper mache. So you're taking it from its wet form. We want to keep it in that wet form. We don't want the cuticles to rise either. So the cuticles is the frizz. So the cuticles rise up and they look for moisture from the atmosphere. But if you've got the gel on it, almost smoothing it downward, your curl will stay in its beautiful form and they'll all stay individualized. So you keep it there until it's dry. So it stays casted. So it almost has a little hard quality to it. And then once it's completely dry, I usually, if my hair feels dry, I still won't open up the gel cast. I might go an extra hour because then I know it's really dry on the inside. It may feel dry on the outside, but the core of it might still be damp. If you open it too soon, then it could frizz. So if you gently scrunch out the cast in the manner of which you applied it, which is scrunching it in, that's what keeps your curls in their nice form throughout the day.
Your product is also sold a lot of places.
These days,
you don't have to go to the Divashon salon to buy your products.
We're in Sephora at the moment, too, which is, especially within the New York City area, of so many clients. This is for their convenience. Everywhere else, it's sold in salons that have been to our training. They're stylists that have Diva inspired that have come to our classes, and they sell them in their salons. So it's usually outside of New York City. It's usually sold within a salon.
But that's a really interesting point. Training. What's that about?
We have so many hairdressers that come to our classes that the curly girl has actually sponsored them
because there's that desperation among women
and
with curly.
And also, these are open, beautiful hairdressers that want to satisfy their customer, which I think, why wouldn't you? I will do anything for my client. In fact, you know, I won't go there, but I gave her, one of my clients, I actually donated eggs to her and she had twins. That's how far I go.
Okay.
Too much information.
Not at all. So your classes are here in New York City?
New York, all over. Sometimes we actually travel. If there's enough hairdressers in another state, we will take our staff and we'll train in a classroom. Yeah. It's really and it's doing very well. In fact, we're getting ready to open up an academy in LA.
Do you think we've made major taken major steps?
I can see it. I can see it every single day. I mean, the thing is, 10 years ago, I came out with my first book. And, you know, there was a little bit of a movement and it seemed that the keratin, the flat iron became even more rampant. But now, especially with all these rains and the high humidity, the curly girls, it's not working anymore. It seems to be resistant because nature does win in the end, no matter what. And the hair really does age. You know, it's so true that hair can age you. And when it's all dried out, it looks old. You know, it looks like an old worn out, you know, dish rag that's been left under a sink. And, but you'll wear a designer clothing, but the hair doesn't match everything
right.
else.
Right.
You know, and you know that you wouldn't allow any of your designer clothes to be treated that way either. But your hair, it's like, oh, yeah, fry it, do whatever you want to do to it. But I think it's just a severe misunderstanding within the training of hairdressers. I think it's really time to update the data. It's very archaic, some of our training techniques.
What about men clients?
The same. We have loads of...
They're drinking your Kool-Aid, too?
They are so sweet about it. And also, but they're so simple, too. They just, you know, they don't grow their hair as long. You know, they just keep it short. They usually just use one or two products. Sometimes the no-poo can act as, you know, how men like all-in-one. No-poo could be their cleanser and conditioner, you know. It's amazing.
You know what? That's
it's
in a
so
word.
Simple.
Yeah.
It's so simple. It's radical simplicity.
You know, you
I
would think
it.
That you're not reinventing the wheel, but you did, in a sense. You really
or
did.
Just broke it down to basics again, because a lot of people don't know what natural is, Sandy, because we go to these hair shows and our booth is just full of curly girls. We even take our water with us. We don't have any models that we prep at 6 o'clock in the morning. We take people from the audience, take their blowouts, and we cleanse them on stage so they can see the transformations. There's nothing fake about us. So hairdressers walk by and say, oh, what curling iron did you use on that curl? And we're like, no, we didn't.
Oh, Lorraine, this was just really fascinating, and I'm clearly hooked. Thank you so much
You're
for
welcome.
Stopping by. Join us next time for another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.